Here we go.
Everybody is just on the feet screaming, kill, kill, kill. This is hockey.
Oh, my Lord. Wow.
This is the Puck Podcast.
I was very entertained and excited. I couldn't believe how good it was.
Shut your yap.
This is the Puck Podcast.
There's a point where it just becomes absurd.
That was gutless.
This is the Puck Podcast.
Hi, I'm Wayne Gretzky, and you're listening to The Real Great One.
This is the Puck Podcast with Eddie Garcia and Doug Stolhan.
Okay, guys, show us what you got.
From Los Angeles, I'm Eddie Garcia, along with Doug Stolhan. Thanks for joining us for another edition of the Puck Podcast. It is Wednesday, December the 13th, 2023. On this week's show, in the first period, we'll discuss all of the notable action from on the ice this week, including the Detroit debut of Patrick Kane. We'll also talk about all the newsworthy events that happened in the NHL, including former Stanley Cup winning coach being fired. We also have our Upon Further Review segment. Second period, Sam Carcitti of Philly Hockey Now going to join us to discuss the surprising Philadelphia Flyers. And in the third period, Doug will have a power play. We'll read your emails and play plus minus as well. All that and more coming up on this edition of the Puck Podcast. But again, I'm Eddie Garcia, and he is Doug Stolhan. Hello, Doug.
Hello, Eddie. It's time for the off-ice report, right?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
And I'm going to start this week because something just happened that made me think of something, and I thought, oh, I'll bring this up on the show. So I'm watching the YouTube videos, the various things that go viral around the world. And there's a video of a flight where a flash mob, as it were, broke out. Somebody stands up and starts singing, and then somebody else joins in and starts singing, and it turns out there's a whole group of, like, a chorus, and they're all singing a song, and the people on the plane are delighted and singing along and taking videos and clapping along and all that. And I thought I would be so uncomfortable on that plane because I do not like being sung to in an intimate setting like that. Like, you know, the happy birthday, I've never liked that. But it's also like, it's just, it's funny how we accept singing as an art form that people can just do whenever they want, wherever they want. And it's no other thing. You wouldn't do that if it was a, you know, I don't care who it was. You wouldn't want the stand-up comic standing up and being like, hey, everybody, I'm just going to do my act here for 5 minutes, work the room. No, sit down, man. You know, if you're a dancer, I don't want to see you doing a dance up and down the aisle. Sit down. But singing, it's just, and I guarantee I would have been the jerk on the plane that didn't enjoy it if they said, everybody like that? No, I did not. I would not have made eye contact with them. I would have been looking down at my seat or acting like I was just reading something, and just, I would have clapped politely when it was done, but I was just thinking I would have been very uncomfortable through the entire thing.
Hmm. Well, I get your point, although I don't know that singing is acceptable in every situation. You know, if you're in an elevator and somebody just starts singing, I think people would be like, what the hell is this guy doing?
Yeah.
You know, if you're in court, just decide to start breaking out in song.
Court has certain decorum, but you know, yeah, well, like if you're walking, and you've traveled internationally enough now, if you're walking through a piazza in Europe and somebody starts breaking into song, there's nobody going to shush them or tell them to beat it.
Well, if you're outdoors, that's probably somewhat acceptable.
Okay, but if that same person started doing another form of art, like comedy, like...
I think people would be okay with that. If he was outside in some sort of a courtyard and was performing, there are people out there, you know, musicians trying to get a little money there, things like that. So
I don't know.
Yeah.
Would you have enjoyed the serenade?
What were they singing? It would probably depend on what they were singing.
Well, they're not singing Metallica. I mean,
I understand, you know, that, but you know,
I don't know. It was some pleasant enough song that you could sing a cappella. I don't even I
suppose I'd be okay with it if it didn't go on too long, you know, if it was the guy. I mean, look, the guy at karaoke made everybody feel uncomfortable by singing the American Pie song, which is not American Pie. that song, Don McLean, what's the name of that damn song?
That's American Pie.
Is it American Pie?
Yeah, oh, yeah. Bye Miss American
yeah,
Pie.
Yeah, yeah. And that thing's like, you know, 10 minutes or something.
Yeah.
So,
and it's also got some dark moments.
Well, the whole thing was a dark moment as far as I was concerned.
Where was that at?
It was at a karaoke bar that I went to many, many, many years ago with a friend. The only time the only time I've even ever gone to a place that was kind of it was that night. It was just like, no, this guy's like auditioning for Star Search or something American Idol. And we're just like, no, sir. People were doing what you said you were doing. They were like looking down at their drinks. They were just kind of wanting it to be over. Cause he's going, you know, not only is it really long, but he's going for it, man. He's like performing a one man show. It's sir. That is not what karaoke night is supposed to be. It's supposed to be about drunken idiots making fools of themselves and you laughing at them, you know, your friends. So anyway,
did you, I know you're not a singer, you're as tone deaf as I am when it comes to singing.
How dare you, sir? You should hear me in the car.
You're telling me you can sing? You can carry a tune?
I'm okay.
All right. Well, then what would your karaoke song be?
I don't know. Honestly, I do not know.
What's one that you enjoy singing along to in the car?
I mean, it's there's no one song where I'm like, you know, that song.
If it comes on, you turn it up and you're singing along.
I mean, there's plenty of them. I don't know. I'll try.
Would it be from the genre of hair metal?
It could be. I'm a man for all seasons. I like all kinds of different things. I was singing a Christmas song in the car the other day.
All right.
Happy holidays. Happy holidays. So I got a call from my wife last night after midnight while I was at work. And it's not uncommon for her to text me stuff. Happens all the time. Sometimes it's a question. Sometimes she's just passing along a funny meme or whatever. So my phone rings. I see it's her, you know, it's on silent, but it rings. I'm like, oh boy. So I answer the phone and she says, we have a mouse in the washing machine. I'm like, we have a mouse in the washing machine? She says, yes, we have a mouse in the washing machine. I'm like, well, that's weird. And so we're trying to figure out, you know, how did the mouse get into the washing machine and how did it survive a wash cycle? Like, my theory was that, you know, maybe it was hanging out in like the pile of clothes in the hamper. And she just scooped up the clothes and threw them in the washing machine. But I don't know how it would survive a wash cycle. But anyway.
How did she discover it?
She was unloading the wash to put into the dryer. And a mouse started running around in the washing machine there. And so she's like, you got to come home and take care of the mouse. I'm like, well, I'll come home when I'm off work.
You're out of your mind. you got to come home right now.
No, she didn't say right now, but she's like, you got to take care of this. And I'm like, okay, fine. No big deal. And so I come home this morning and she's like barricaded the door with towels and whatnot. And there's no way that little mouse is going to be able to get out of the washing machine. So I open up the lid. Sure enough, there's a adorable little mouse in like some clothing that was left in there. And I got a big plastic cup, kind of like one of those super big gulp cups from 7-Eleven. Had a little towel. He tried to jump around. He was very quick. If he had gotten out of there, there was no way in hell I'd ever catch him. But I scooped him up in the cup, took him down to the green belt, down the way, and let Mr. Jingles free. So hopefully he's doing well.
But, Mr. Jingles?
You remember that in the Green Mile?
No.
Oh, well, Mr. Jingles.
That was the name of the mouse?
Yeah, the Mouseville and perform tricks. Mr. Jingles. Yeah, absolutely. So.
Well, there you go. I've seen videos like that. The mouse in the house, guy or gal decides to do the humane thing like you did and liberate it without harming it. and they do like you do and take it to a park. And I've seen it let go, and a hawk immediately swoop down, pick it up, and off it goes as a meal.
Well, I did not see that.
No.
So hopefully he's, I like to think he's excited about his newfound liberation outdoors and is
I'm sure he much prefers it to your washing machine.
I would think so. I thought that that was probably a harrowing night, especially if somehow he did get washed and survived it.
Clean as a whistle.
Yeah, he was definitely very clean, very clean.
Well, it reminds me, I forget the comedian. I think it was, I can't remember, so I won't guess. But he was talking about being on the road, and his wife would call him or text him and say, "Your dog pooped in the living room again." And he's like, "Well, what do you want me to do about it? I'm in Memphis, you know, pick it up. I'll have it, put him on the phone. I'll talk to him. What do you want me to do about it?" You know, I mean, and
now, you know, you're not supposed to do that.
Yeah. It's your dog. Well, then put a napkin over it and I'll pick it up when I get home in 2 months. What are you calling me for? So if you were out of town, unavailable, what would she have done? Called an exterminator?
I'm guessing she would have called a family member, try and save a little money to come over and take care of it. That would be my guess. So,
or would she have put Herbie in there?
Yeah, that would have been, I don't think that would have helped matters. You know? I'm sure he would have been very excited to try and, he would never have caught that mouse, man. When I set it on the ground, that thing was like a bullet. It took off, man.
Yeah.
I was like, whoa, that thing is quick.
Anyway. Oh, the story he's telling is, his friends right now.
I was in this thing and there was water. I thought I was going to drown. I grabbed a hold of this. Anyway. And then this big thing scoops me up and next thing I know, I'm here. All right, let's get into the hockey talk for this week. And we do have a big story to mention, but we're going to hold off and talk about the week that was on the ice in the NHL. I'll give you a quick note on each day and most of the games, and then Doug will chime in with his thoughts, and I'll give mine if I feel it's necessary. But let's go back to last Wednesday, where we had four games on the schedule. We're going to mention all four of them. We'll start with the Oilers rolling over the Hurricanes 6-1. Zach Hyman with a hat trick for Edmonton. Connor McDavid had three assists, and the Oilers had won five straight at that point. Golden Knights beat the Blues 6-3. Vegas was down 3-1 in the first period, outscored St. Louis 5-0 the rest of the way. Panthers beat the Stars 5-4. Sam Reinhart gets his 17th goal of the season. And the Lightning beat the Penguins 3-1. Nikita Kucherov, his 17th goal of the season, had an assist as well.
Well, the game I'll touch on first is the Oilers' boat race win over the Hurricanes. On home ice, yes, but Zach Hyman with the hat trick. And when you get a 6-1 win and none of the goals are from McDavid or Dreisaitl, that's what the Oilers fans like to see. Zach Hyman having a very nice year. He's already got 15 goals at that point. But it was the perfect combination. Stuart Skinner played great in net with 38 saves, only allowing one goal. That's exactly what they want to see. They get six goals from the team collectively, none of which came from Dreisaitl or McDavid. That's what they like to see. So exactly the type of game Edmonton needs to see more of. And for Carolina, a very bad performance, but it's been kind of indicative of their year. They've been struggling to find their footing and get some traction going. We think they will get it when it's all said and done, but you can't deny that this team is struggling right now. And that was a bad performance all the way around.
Oh, no doubt about that. Let's move on to Thursday. 13 games on the schedule. We're going to touch on 10 of them. We'll start with the Kings shutting out the Canadiens 4-0, and LA set a new NHL record for their 11th straight road win to start a season. The old record was held by the Buffalo Sabres, who had 10 wins on the road to start a season. Cam Talbot, 24 saves in net in the shutout victory. Stars got by the Capitals 5-4 in a shootout. In the loss, Alexander Ovechkin had an assist. He becomes the 16th player in NHL history to reach the 1,500 career point mark. Sabres surprised the Bruins in Boston 3-1. Boston has suffered just its second regulation home loss of the season, and Buffalo snapped a four-game losing skid in the process. Patrick Kane made his Detroit debut in a 6-5 overtime loss to the Sharks. He did not have a point in 16 minutes and 33 seconds of ice time. For San Jose, they went back-to-back road games for the first time this season. Mikael Granlund with the overtime game winner. A bit of a wild game in this one, a scoreless first period. Then Detroit scored four straight goals, followed by San Jose scoring four straight goals, all in the second period, in an interesting game there. Jets knock off the Avalanche 4-2 in Colorado. Kyle Connor had two goals, numbers 16 and 17 for him. Canucks shut out the Wild 2-0. Casey DeSmith with the shutout for Vancouver, his first as a member of the Canucks. You had the Blackhawks shutting out the Ducks 1-0. Peter Mrazek, 37 saves for Chicago. Philip Kurashev gets the lone goal, and this was a battle of the top two picks in this year's NHL draft. Connor Bedard with an assist. Obviously, Leo Carlson did not have a point with the Ducks not scoring a goal. Bedard leads all rookies with 12 goals and 24 points in 28 games. Carlson has 8 goals, tied with Adam Fantilli of Columbus for second amongst rookies. He also has 13 points in 19 games this season. Flyers knocked off the Coyotes to snap Arizona's 5-game winning streak. You had the Flames scoring 3 straight goals in the third period to beat the Hurricanes 3-2. Blake Coleman's shorthanded goal was the game winner. And the Devils edged the Kraken 2-1. Simon Nemec's first career NHL goal is the game winner.
Well, I definitely want to talk about that Sharks game in a second, but I'm going to start with the Jets 4-2 win over the Avalanche, as I thought that was a big win for Winnipeg on the road. They are continuing to surprise a lot of people with their performance, and going into Colorado, a division rival, getting that win, getting those 2 points in regulation. Great game from Kyle Connor. Again, he has the 2 goals, including the game sealing empty netter, the only goal of the third period. And just an impressive performance, I thought, from top to bottom, including Connor Hellebuck, who had 32 saves to keep a dangerous Avalanche team off the board for most of the night, and especially their star players. Mikko Rantanen, no points. Nathan MacKinnon did have his 2 points, a goal and an assist, but Cale Makar, no points. And if you can knock – those three are obviously the three prongs of the trident for Colorado. If you can keep all three from sticking you, then you've done pretty well and you're giving yourself a good chance to win. So well done by Winnipeg in that one. And then let's go to that, as you said, that Sharks win in overtime, but still very impressive, gritty effort from San Jose, a team that has been struggling this year, certainly playing a lot better since the GM came down and talked to him, but giving up 4 goals, as you said, in a row in the second period to go down 4-0. 3 of which, by the way, were in less than 1 minute. It was 1-0 halfway through the game. Then Michael Rasmussen scored twice in 13 seconds. And then Lucas Raymond scored 36 seconds after that. So it went from 1-0 to 4-0 in less than a minute of hockey. And you wouldn't blame the Sharks for packing it in at that point. But instead, 28 seconds later, Tomas Hertl scored less than a minute after that. Fabian Zetterlund scored less than a minute after that. Nico Sturm scored. And then they get a second goal from Sturm before the end of the period to tie it up and go into the third. Had to be feeling great. So very impressive effort collectively from the San Jose Sharks to come back, not only in that game, but in that period when most of us would have given up on them after falling down 4-0.
Let's move on to Friday. We had 3 games. We will mention all 3 of them. The Oilers edged the Wild 4-3 in a battle of 2 teams that have made in-season coaching changes. Connor McDavid, a goal and an assist. That's 6 straight wins at that point for the Oilers. Blue Jackets beat the Blues 5-2. Jet Greaves, 41 saves in net for his first career win for Columbus. And the Panthers down the Penguins 3-1. Pittsburgh dropped 4 in a row at that point.
Yeah, Jet Greaves, indeed. I wonder if how much this game played into what we're going to talk about after our game recaps, because Columbus did not play a particularly great game. They got outshot almost 2-1. St. Louis had 43 shots. Columbus only had 22. And yet the Blues were just not able to capitalize on their opportunities. They were 0-for-3 on the power play, and they gave up a power play goal. They didn't get the timely saves or stops when they needed to. They only had 21 shots against them. They still gave up 5 goals. I wonder how much this plays into what we're going to see down the road.
Let's move on to Saturday. 12 games on the schedule. We'll mention 10 of them. The Islanders got 2 goals from Captain Anders Lee in the third period, and then Jean-Gabriel Pageot scored in overtime for a 3-2 win over the Kings. That snapped LA's season-opening 11-game road winning streak. They were one away from tying the record for overall road winning streak in the NHL. Let's see, who was that record held by? I think it was Detroit and Minnesota are co-holders of that 12-game road winning streak, which is the longest in the NHL. The Senators beat the Red Wings 5-1. Patrick Kane did score his first goal as a Red Wing in the loss. Also, a scary moment in this one when Detroit captain Dylan Larkin laid motionless on the ice for several minutes after a couple of hits while he was battling in front of the net. That led to a cross check from Detroit's David Perron to the head of Ottawa's Artem Zub in retaliation. We'll have more on this coming up. Senators win the game 5-1, as I mentioned. Golden Knights beat the Stars 6-1. Vegas with 6 different goal scorers in that win. Maple Leaf shut out the Predators 4-0. Elias Samsonov, 18 saves, and Austin Matthews had a pair of goals, numbers 17 and 18 for him. Capitals blank the Rangers 4-0. Charlie Lindgren, 31 saves in net for Washington. Lightning over the Kraken, 4-3 in overtime. Nikita Kucherov, 2 goals, including the overtime game winner, goals 18 and 19 on the season for him. Bruins down the Coyotes 5-2. David Pastrnak, a pair of goals, numbers 15 and 16 for him. Devils shut down the Flames 4-2. Nico Hischier with 2 goals. New Jersey had won 6 of 7. At that point, you had the Blackhawks defeating the Blues 3-1, and the Flyers taking down the Avalanche in Colorado 5-2.
Well, the two I want to touch on very briefly, the boat race win by Vegas over Dallas in Dallas was, I don't want to say a statement win because they're the defending Stanley Cup champions and it's a game in December, but it certainly put Dallas on notice as, you know, I think a lot of people would look at those two teams as two of the best in the Western Conference and maybe destined for a Western Conference final matchup. And putting a beatdown on them in their own barn, starting the game hot with 3 goals in the first period, adding 1 in the second, adding 2 more in the third for 6-1 win. I think that was a very impressive win by Vegas. And especially since I think they completely, it was a defensive game. There were only 47 shots total between the two teams. Logan Thompson only had to make 19 saves. So he only faced 20 shots the entire night. That's fantastic defensive work from Vegas. So when you can go into the other team's arena, they get last change and you can still control the game defensively that well and then take advantage of the opportunities you get against their number one goalie. They put 6 goals past Jake Oettinger. Thought that was a very impressive statement win from Vegas. And the other one is the Lightning Kraken game, a 4-3 win for Tampa, who has struggled, much like Carolina, to get some momentum going this year and is still not where you would expect them to be. But one guy that is where you would expect him to be is Nikita Kucherov, his 19th goal of the season, 18th and 19th in that game, including the game winner in overtime. I thought that was a important win for Tampa on the road to beat a good team, a playoff team from last year, and find a way to get 2 points, which has not been easy for them to do consistently this season.
Let's move on to Sunday. 8 games on the schedule. We'll mention 5 of them. Rangers beat the Kings 4-1. Former LA goalie Jonathan Quick beating his old team to improve to 8-0-1 on the season. Oilers down the Devils 4-1. Edmonton winning for the 7th straight time. Connor McDavid a goal and an assist. Calvin Pickard got the win in net, his first NHL win in almost 2 years. Wild blanked the Kraken, 3-0. Philip Gustafsson, 24 saves in the shutout. 8 straight losses for Seattle at that point. Jets score 4 straight goals in the third period, rally to beat the Ducks in Anaheim 4-2. And the Golden Knights get by the Sharks 5-4 in a shootout. Jonathan Marchessault, 2 goals in regulation and the shootout game winner as well.
Well, the two I'm going to talk about is one tongue-in-cheek. Well, but I think they're both tongue-in-cheek, actually, this week, and then we can move to Monday. I'm worried about your Kings. That's a two-game losing streak on the road.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what's going on, but you obviously watched this game. I'm talking to you, Eddie, not you, the audience. I caught highlights, and I got to say, one of the draws of the original six teams for me is the tradition. I did not like the jerseys the Rangers were wearing in that game. They had some, because when I first tuned in, I'm like, what is this? I don't know what you thought of them, but they had like some weird striping, red, white, and blue striping on the bottom of the jersey and on the arms. And I did not care for that look. I think the original six should stick to very basic modifications or historic throwbacks. And this didn't work for me.
I would generally agree with what you're saying. It was kind of a really darker blue than their normal jerseys, and it had the big, I don't know what you would call that, the Ranger logo,
the
that
massive
kind of shield. Yeah, the shield on the front. Yeah, I didn't care for it too much. I didn't hate it, but I wasn't a fan of it. But you know, hey, they're gonna make money wherever they can. So it's but I think it's kind of weird, and I'm not an NBA fan anymore. I was at one time, as you were. When I see like the Lakers and Celtics wearing these weird jerseys, because the NBA has even weirder jerseys that they use than the NHL. And when I see those for those types of teams, it does really kind of bother me, which is like, no.
Yeah. No. Well, I also, not to get off on a tangent too much.
Yeah, go ahead. It's okay.
But you and I did at one point both enjoy the NBA. It's been a long time since either one of us have cared about that league or watched it on a regular basis. But we both work in sports. We both see it. What they're doing with the courts is awful. It makes it very hard to watch a game, in my opinion, when these courts, and I hope the NHL never goes that route. And I don't think they will, because it's a pain in the ass to melt the ice, repaint it, freeze it, and get it back going. But they've got these elaborate paint schemes that are just, it makes it very difficult to track the game, in my opinion. Very distracting to watch.
And I mean, you and I, there's a certain football team in college that we hate, and they have a blue field, which I think is, I mean, it was kind of a fun gimmick, I guess, to get them some attention, but I will grudgingly admit they've turned into a very, very good college football program. They don't really need that gimmick anymore. I've always thought they should get rid of it, but apparently they won't. But those types of things are, it's hard to watch a game for me on that field. It's just really distracting and not pleasing.
And I think it's Eastern Washington has a bright red field.
Yeah, there are a few other ones out there that have gone to this.
There's one that has the silver field.
I get it. Like I said, if you're a team that's struggling for attention, I get it. But like I said, I don't think that team really needs to do that anymore. Anyway. But yes, I agree.
Let's make one other reference to other sports, and then we'll bring it back to hockey.
Yeah.
And that is the other game I wanted to mention from Sunday. The Wild beat the Kraken 3-0, which was the same score as the Minnesota Vikings game that same day. Both teams from Minnesota won 3-0 on the same day.
That was what a barn burner that was. Hang your head in shame, Raiders.
Yeah. There will be no refunds, fans.
My God. I mean, I will, it's always weird. It maybe doesn't happen all that often when a former legendary player for your team is now playing for another team and beats your team. So that was not enjoyable for me, seeing Jonathan Quick beat the Kings. It was
rooting against Jonathan Quick.
I mean, yeah, especially that position, right? If he were as a skater, it might be a little different. In a sense, because he's not playing the whole game, and it's not, the goal isn't to literally beat him, right? So I think playing that position as well kind of lent itself to it. Did not enjoy it. I'm sure it was a nice win for him. I'm sure he did enjoy it. Yeah. It's always a very awkward situation when someone who's helped you win championships and who I believe is the greatest goalie in franchise history is now wearing another jersey and beating your team. So.
Yeah,
not enjoyable. Not enjoyable.
No, it never is. The seeing Brady come back and beat the Patriots.
Yeah.
But then again, thanks for all the championships, man. I can't hate you one bit. We got six championship banners up there, and I got great memories. So love you. And I get it. It's a business. And they're, you know, takes two to tango. The Kings are the ones that got rid of him. So it's a whole different thing when they decide to leave, I think. Mm-hmm. You know, like when Paul Kariya left the Ducks, I hated him because he decided to leave. When the Ducks traded Teemu Selänne, I did not hate him because he didn't decide to leave.
Let's move on to Monday. We had four games. We'll talk about three of them. Sorry, Coyotes, Sabres. The Islanders beat the Maple Leafs in overtime 4-3. Bo Horvat, overtime game winner. In the loss, former Islander, now Maple Leaf captain John Tavares, had a goal and an assist to reach 1,000 career points, much to the delight of the folks there on Long Island, but not really. The Avalanche scored, well, they got the win, though. The Avalanche scored three unanswered goals in the third period, rally past the Flames for a 6-5 win. Nathan MacKinnon with the game winner, and the Stars beat the Red Wings 6-3.
Well, I do want to talk about the Islanders game because an impressive win on home ice for them and a big win. They continue to, you know, they're playing better. They certainly had a very good week and playing better than I expected them to after their slow start this season. They're starting to catch their stride and be back to the team they were. Timely goals from their big players and then good defense and good goaltending. But this one, until John Tavares retires, is one of those sneaky rivalries that I always like watching because of how passionately the Islanders fans boo him, taunt him, hate him for him leaving. Exactly what I talked about. He decided to leave. He burned them. He turned his back on them, and they hate him. It's not nearly what it was. That first time he went back was as passionate a hockey crowd as I've ever seen. As far as heckling another player, but it's still there. It's still present in the building and they still celebrate the wins. And I thought that was a big win for the Islanders on home ice against Sean Tavares in a game where he played well, reached a milestone, and they still come out of there with the 2 points. I thought that was a nice night for pretty much everybody involved, really.
Yeah, and the Leafs have the dad trip going on right now, and they show John Tavares's dad who, I think he was celebrating that 1,000th point a little bit more considering where they were and whatnot.
Yeah.
And obviously being a dad, being protective of your son, but he was enjoying that quite a bit. Didn't enjoy the result, I'm sure, but did enjoy seeing John Tavares get his 1,000th point against his old team.
He's also the probably 50-50 chance that he's the one that bought the fateful new Toronto Maple Leafs sheets that John Tavares had his he picture may have, taken in as a child.
It's possible. I don't know.
It was either him or his mom.
I would bet mom. If I'm going to bet on that, I would bet mom. I think mom did all the sheet buying in the Garcia household. I don't think dad did that. But you never know. On Tuesday, we had 10 games. We're going to talk about 9 of them. And the Red Wings knocked off the Blues at 6-4. After the game, St. Louis fired their head coach, Craig Berube. We will obviously talk a lot more about that coming up in just a moment. Golden Knights beat the Flames 5-4 in overtime. Mark Stone, the overtime game winner. Vegas, the first team in the NHL to hit the 20-win mark. They also lead the league with 45 points. Oilers won their 8th straight game with a 4-1 win over the Blackhawks. Maple Leafs roll over the Rangers in New York 7-3. Auston Matthews, 2 goals, numbers 20 and 21 for him. And Martin Jones, 28 saves. His first start for Toronto, the old veteran, found a job there with the Maple Leafs. Predators beat the Flyers 3-2 in overtime. Philip Forsberg, the OT game winner. Nashville's won 11-14. Philadelphia, meanwhile, 4-0-2 in their last 6. And we'll talk a lot more about them in the second period with Sam Carcitti. The Penguins beat the Coyotes 4-2. Pittsburgh snapping an 0-37 drought on the power play with a Jake Guentzel man advantage goal in the first period. Arizona has now dropped 4 in a row. Hurricanes snapped their 4-game skid with a 4-1 win over the Senators. Yeah, the Canucks beating the Lightning 4-1. Brock Besser, a hat trick. Goals 19, 20, and 21 for him. And the Sharks beat the Jets 2-1. That is San Jose with their 6th win in their last 8 games. They had 3 wins in their first 20. So, as you mentioned, after that chat Mike Greer had, they certainly seem to have been playing better hockey of late. There's no question about that.
They couldn't have played much worse.
That's very true as well.
I mean, they gave up 10 goals in back-to-back games. My goodness, and looked like they were going to be the worst team in history, and they are far from that, and we'll have more on that in a little bit. But the games I want to talk about from yesterday, as we record this, is the Maple Leafs rebounding And you made the same trip there with your Kings, where they lost both games to the Islanders and Rangers in back-to-back games. The Maple Leafs lose to the Islanders, come back and beat the Rangers soundly, 7-3, and a very impressive game. And I'll be honest, I don't follow a lot of the teams in the East very closely. I did not know Martin Jones was in the NHL. So when I saw him not only get the start but get the win, I was very surprised. But the injury to Joseph Woll, and he's the new backup there for Ilya Samsonov, and got the win in impressive fashion for Toronto. And I thought that was a big bounce-back win after a disappointing night on the island. The other game I want to talk about is a team breaking their losing streak, and that's Seattle with an impressive 4-0 win over Florida. Florida's a good team. Seattle has been struggling, and they get a nice win on home ice, 4-0. That's just got to be a great feeling going into the locker room. The shutout from Joey Decord, the goals from four different players, Kyler Yamamoto, Pierre-Edouard Belmar, Alex Wenberg, and Eli Tolvanen, all getting on the board. It's just, that's one that makes everybody feel good about themselves, cleanses the palate after a losing streak, and gets you feeling a little bit better about yourself going into the next game. We'll see if they can build on that momentum in the week to come.
I wanted to mention the Oilers and their 8-game winning streak. And you know me about as well as anyone. I have never been one to enjoy a good conspiracy theory. As a matter of fact, I hate most of them. It's just not my thing. But the timing of this is very curious to me. It's impossible not to. So the Oilers get rid of their head coach and they bring in Connor McDavid's junior coach to coach the team. And Connor McDavid goes from somebody who's hurt and is severely underperforming to suddenly he's amazing. And it's the old Connor McDavid. If it had been a month later, I probably wouldn't have thought anything of it, but the timing of the firing, him suddenly being back to who he was, and now the team on fire, seems very curious to me. Thoughts on that?
I think it's accurate. I'll put it that way. I think you're exactly right. I think he was trying to get, he was not given his best effort to Jay Woodcroft, because he had 8 points on the season, right? I'm going to look this up real quick, how many points he had going in. He had 38 points total, and I think he's got 22 since he took over. So, yeah, he had 16 points in 16 games, and now he's got 22 points in 8 games. The timing is obviously coincidental. There's nothing to be seen there. The first game he played under the hand-picked coach, 4 points. The next game, 5 points. The next game, 3 points. He had not had more than 2 points at any point this year. He went on a 3-game streak with more than 2 points when he got the coach that he wanted. And he claims he didn't have anything to do with it, right?
Yes.
That he wouldn't,
it's not in his personality to do something right like that.
It's his former agent that's the team president?
Correct.
And his former junior coach is now the head coach?
That's correct, yes.
And we're led to believe that he had nothing to do with either of those decisions?
And we're led to believe that he was hurt before.
Yeah.
But now suddenly it's a miracle.
Well. Yeah.
I mean,
this guy's Mr. Miyagi.
And now he's killing it and the team is on fire. Like I said. The timing of it is impossible not to.
Is your conspiracy theory that the Oilers were sandbagging it under Jay Woodcroft to get him fired?
My conspiracy is that Connor McDavid was, and maybe, I don't know, maybe the team was as well. But it just, like I said, the timing of...
You think Connor McDavid specifically?
How does he go from being playing the worst hockey of his career, and suddenly there's a coaching change, and it happens to be his former junior coach, and now he's the MVP of the league overnight. I mean, how do you not question that?
You're not wrong. It is very suspicious, to say the least. If it's a coincidence, it's a hell of a one. He is now eighth in the league in scoring. Again, in his last eight, I'm not good at math, but let's take a look here. I mentioned he started off with 4, 5, so that's 9, 12, 13, 16, 22 goal or 22 points in his last eight games of his 38.
Like I said, if it's a month later, maybe I'm like, okay, he got
or if it, or if, even if it's in spurts.
Yeah, it's in the sun, it's just like a turning on a light switch. It's completely different. So, I mean, like I said, I'm not a big conspiracy theory guy, but I don't know how it's possible that you see and pay attention to what's going on and not put two and two together. Sometimes it's so obvious you have to see it. So anyway,
let's go back to another sport though, Eddie.
Yeah,
much as we hate to do
that. And look, we know that the coaching bump does happen.
Yes,
right. And we'll see if it happens for the St. Louis Blues. But there's
it happened for the Wild.
There's a team bump, and then there's that. I don't know. It's to me, it's just so jarring that it's impossible for me, who hate conspiracy theories, to not think there's something dicey going on there. But anyway,
let's go back. Let's compare this to another sport that we have fallen out of favor with, the NBA. Personality-driven league. The inmates run the asylum. The players dictate who is the coach, when they get fired, who they get replaced with. The star players, right? We've seen it time and time again.
Yes.
Do you think this is a step towards the NHL becoming that? That if you're a guy like Connor McDavid, you've now determined who the franchise has as their team president and their head coach.
Well, certainly there's a select number of players in all sports who could wield that kind of power, right? A quarterback in the NFL certainly could do that. Obviously, the NBA
star quarterback.
Yes. Yeah. Certainly in the NBA, because of the makeup of that game, one or two players are huge. So that certainly can happen. And, you know, if you're a superstar like Connor McDavid, of course you can wield that kind of power. And then we've seen, for better or worse, that athletes today are, and the money that they make, wield more power than ever before. So I don't know that it's, I would be surprised if it's something that, you know, happens a lot in hockey.
No, as you said, it's a select
few. Do I think
it's
possible that could be the case? Absolutely. Yeah.
And on the other side of the coin, if I'm running the Edmonton Oilers, why would I not do what I can to make Connor McDavid happy and get the best hockey out of him?
Yeah,
hey, I want a new head coach. No, I'm committed to Jay Woodcroft. You got it, man. I'm going to go down and fire Jay right now. How do you want me to word it?
Yeah, no, I'm not even saying the Oilers would be wrong for doing that. I'm just...
Because I want your best hockey.
Yeah.
And I want you to be happy. You're in the entire franchise. So it's not fair to Jay Woodcroft or anybody else in the front office or coaching staff or the rest of the roster. But it is what it is. You need him to win. And they have not lost since the coaching change. And he's been fantastic. So winning is a great deodorant, as a great head coach once said. And so Connor McDavid does not stink right now to Edmonton Oilers fans.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt. Let's check the standings as they are going into today's action here on December the 13th. We'll start with the Eastern Conference. Your top three in the Atlantic Division are the Boston Bruins, Florida Panthers, and Toronto Maple Leafs. Florida moved up from a week ago. They were in the three spot this time a week ago, so they're now in second. And Toronto was the number one wildcard team in the East. They're now in third place in the Atlantic. Boston, by the way, tied with the New York Rangers for the most points in the East. Both of them have 39. The Bruins have, or I should say the Rangers have one more win at 19, but the Bruins have played one fewer game. In the Metropolitan Division, it is the New York Rangers in first place again this week. The New York Islanders, the big mover the standings this week. They went from out of the playoffs a week ago to now in second place in the Metropolitan Division. Philadelphia Flyers, again, talk more about them in the second period. They remain in third in the Metro. Your two wildcard teams in the East, Detroit, they dropped out of second place in their division to the number one wildcard spot. And the Washington Capitals, once again, surprisingly holding on to the number two wildcard spot. Carolina and Tampa Bay are actually tied with Washington in points with 31. But Washington right now has the tiebreaker, and New Jersey sits 2 points out of a wild card spot in the East.
Well, the other thing, not only do they have the tiebreaker, Washington is much like your Kings. They've been on an easy schedule so far as games played. They have 5 games in hand against Tampa, who is tied with them in the standings, and 3 games in hand on Carolina, who is tied with them. So if they get 1 point in any of those games in hand, they obviously are ahead of them in the points as well. So impressive there. The Islanders, 7 wins in their last 10 games, 7-1-2. That is how you make a run at the top of the standings, and very impressive run from them. As I was questioning whether or not they had it in them this year, they have answered that and then some. Very impressive streak here in the last few weeks.
Let's move over to the Western Conference. Your top 3 in the Central are the same as last week. Colorado 1, Dallas 2, Winnipeg 3. In the Pacific, a slight change. Vegas at the top. They lead the NHL, as I mentioned, with 45 points and with 20 wins on the season. So the defending Stanley Cup champs playing some great hockey. Once again, Vancouver has moved back into the 2 spot. LA has fallen back into the 3 spot. But as you mentioned, the games in hand, LA does have 4 games in hand on Vancouver and 5 on Vegas.
They would have to win all 5 to overcome Vegas. But if they're on the road, I like the Kings' chances.
We'll see. The wild card teams in the West, you've got Nashville moving into a wild card spot. And Arizona drops from the number 1 wild card spot to the number 2 wild card spot. St. Louis held a wild card spot last week. They have dropped out. But they're still only 1 point out of a wild card spot. And Edmonton also, with their winning streak, has moved 1 point out of a wild card spot. Calgary, 2 points out of a wild card spot in the West.
Yeah, the Oilers are objects in mirror are closer than they appear with the way they've been playing lately. Obviously, 8-2 in their last 10 games, and they have flown up the standings, which they were buried for a long time. So it'll be interesting to see where we are a week from now and a month from now with some of these teams that are hanging on to playoff spots like Arizona and Washington. Can they turn things around and start winning games again? Arizona lost 4 straight, as you mentioned. Or can teams that are below them and are struggling, like Edmonton was, catch fire, like the Islanders were, catch fire and start moving up the standings very quickly? And you mentioned the Central Division standings. Only 2 points separate first from third. Colorado has 36 points. The Jets are the third spot with 34 points. And Nashville is in fourth with 32 points. So 4 points separate the top 4 in the Central Division. That's a hell of a race.
And Vancouver continues to win. Very impressive. 19 wins on the season so far for them.
I mean, they got the league leader in goals, right?
They do.
Brock Besser. He's one of 2 players with 21 goals. He and Austin Matthews.
Yep. As we switch over to the stats, tell you about the stats leaders.
Very impressive that those guys, and I'll go ahead and finish off the top 5 there in goals. Nikita Kucherov is 3rd with 19. As I mentioned, he had the 2-goal game earlier this week. I think that was against Seattle. And then Kyle Connor and Sam Reinhart, both with 17, tied for 4th in the league in goals scored.
And unfortunately, we'll have an injury report on Kyle Connor coming up. As far as your points leader, Nikita Kucherov of Tampa Bay, 47 points to lead the league. JT Miller of Vancouver has 42. Nathan MacKinnon, David Pastrnak, Artemi Panarin, Quinn Hughes all check in with 39 points. Obviously, Hughes the only defenseman on the list. Connor McDavid, 38 points on the season.
Moving fast at Connor McDavid. It's still impressive that the Vancouver Canucks have 2 of the top 3 goals or point scorers in the entire league. And Elias Pettersson is 1 below Connor McDavid. He's 8th in the league. I mean, those are 3 guys just driving the bus. So, and notice the 3 guys that you mentioned, JT Miller, Quinn Hughes, and Elias Pettersson in points, none of which are Brock Besser, who's leading the league in goals. It's impressive what Vancouver's got going on right now.
Checking the goalies, Aiden Hill of Vegas is your goals against average leader, 1.87. Cam Talbot of LA, 2nd at 1.91. Jeremy Swayman of Boston, 2.08. Jonathan Quick of the Rangers, 2.20. And Charlie Lindgren of Washington, 2.34 goals against average. As far as your save percentage leaders, Aiden Hill of Vegas at 935. Jeremy Swayman of Boston, 932. Cam Talbot and Charlie Lindgren, 931, and Semyon Varlamov at 925. All right, let's get to the big story this week. It happened last night. We mentioned it earlier, but the St. Louis Blues have made a coaching change, firing Craig Berube. Blues are 13-14-1 on the season. They lose to Detroit 6-4. That was their fourth loss in a row and sixth loss in their last eight games. However, the Blues, as I mentioned, are only 1 point out of a wild card spot in the West. This was Berube's sixth season as Blues head coach. His overall record, 206-132-44. He was hired 19 games into the 2018-19 season, orchestrated one of the most dramatic turnarounds in NHL history, going from last in the Western Conference in January to winning the franchise's first Stanley Cup. Blues did make the playoffs for the next three seasons after, but won only one first-round series. They missed the postseason last year. Drew Bannister, who coached their AHL affiliate in Springfield, has been named interim coach. But they have stressed it is interim. They will be doing a search for their next head coach. Apparently, it is not going to be Drew Bannister unless, you know, he does amazing things with the Blues. Then I'm sure that they would reconsider that. But apparently, they are doing a coaching search. As for Bannister, he will be behind the bench on Thursday for his first game as Blues head coach. He's 49 years old, spent the last 3 years in the AHL with the Blues affiliate. He did guide the Springfield, Thunderbirds to a Calder Cup Finals appearance in his first season. Was an NHL defenseman back in the day, from 1995 to 2001, played 164 games. I thought I heard he played for the Mighty Ducks. Do you remember him at all? That is correct.
I do remember him.
Okay.
When I heard the name, I was like, wow, I haven't thought of him in a long time. But yeah, I definitely remember him as a player.
Your thoughts on the decision by the St. Louis Blues?
But very surprising to me on the outside looking in.
Yeah, I agree.
I'm not plugged in like our friend Jeff Ponder with the St. Louis Blues on a day-to-day basis.
We may need to get Jeff on the show next week, but anyway.
Yeah. So very surprising to me because, as you said, as we talked about just a minute ago with the standings, they're 1 point out of a playoff spot.
Yeah.
And I get that they only have 3 wins in their last 10 games, but I don't know that – I haven't watched the Blues enough to say coaching is the problem, but a guy that helped you win a Stanley Cup not that long ago, we're not talking 10 years ago, I think deserves a little bit more slack in the rope.
I totally agree with you. I was very surprised by this, and you're right. They aren't playing their best hockey of late for sure, but it's not like they've cratered and this is a complete disaster. And again, like, as you said, this is a guy who very recently won you your only Stanley Cup. I would have thought he got like, I was thinking the same thing. You would think he would get a little bit more rope than this, but
yeah, maybe Robert Thomas wanted him fired and he has a connection to Drew Bannister. We don't know about
Jordan Kyrou did not like.
Yeah,
he called and look, I mean, I know Doug Armstrong, the GM's getting a lot of heat over this in St. Louis. It could very well be ownership saying, hey, make a change. And he's got to do what they want to do. I don't know that that's the case, but.
Like I said, we're going to have to talk to Jeff Ponder and we're going to have to talk to some people in St. Louis and hear more because there could be a rift between Berube and management in the way he's using the roster. We signed certain players to play certain roles and you're not putting them in those minutes. You're not giving them that opportunity. I'm hearing from the roster. I'm hearing from this. We don't know, but just purely on the basis of wins, losses, the guys you expect, Jay Woodcroft made sense. The team was struggling. Star player wasn't happy or wasn't performing well. Made sense. Dean Evason made sense. Team is struggling. Guys weren't performing up to their capabilities. I get it. Neither one of them had won a Stanley Cup in recent years with that team either. This one seemed odd. And I don't know if he asked players to see their phones. I don't know what led to this or how long St. Louis has been thinking about this. Like, were they thinking about making a coaching change after last season and decided this was the slack in the rope? Let's see how he is doing, 20, 25 games, 30 games into the season. And then they look and they're 28 games in and they're not even in the playoffs. And they're like, all right, that's it. We gave him a chance. We're not in a playoff spot. We've done this before where we make a coaching change midseason and it's worked out very well for us. Let's try and catch lightning in a bottle again. It's rare to me that if they're thinking about doing this, though, that they didn't have somebody already in mind to replace him. It's rare to get the interim coach that they're going to now do a coaching search in season to then take over, because it tells the players on the roster, don't get too comfortable with this guy. He's just here for a week, 2 weeks, maybe a month. Who knows? He could be replaced at any minute as soon as we find somebody that we like better. And that doesn't set up Drew Bannister to be the voice and the presence he needs to be behind the bench, not setting him up to be successful. So it's very odd what's going on in St. Louis. And I thought, just my, again, not knowing the details of why it happened, I thought it was an overreaction to a bump in the road, a speed bump, a dip. And I was very surprised by it when I heard that news.
Let's move over to the ER report. And it was mentioned earlier in the first period, and we'll touch on something that came from it as well a bit. But Dylan Larkin, the captain of the Detroit Red Wings, placed on injured reserve. There is no timetable for his return at this point, according to head coach Derek Malone. Larkin tied for the team lead in points at the time of his injury. So obviously the Red Wings are playing really well, but that's certainly not good news for them here at the moment. Columbus captain Boone Jenner placed on injured reserve, fractured jaw, suffered against the Blues. He's expected to be out 6 weeks. Also for Columbus, defenseman Adam Boqvist is out 4 weeks with a shoulder strain. Seattle Kraken plays goalie Philip Grubauer on injured reserve. So it's Joey Decord, your number one goalie for Seattle for now. And they are not doing well at the moment. The Kraken are, we thought last year was a bit of a magical season for them. This season, not going as well for Seattle.
Yeah.
And they're going to have to deal with some goalie issues right now. Canadiens forward Tanner Pearson out 4 to 6 weeks with an upper body injury. Senators Thomas Chabot out a minimum of 4 weeks with an injury, although they said he would not need surgery. And the Jets leading scorer Kyle Connor, they're saying day-to-day, but he's going to get reevaluated. A knee-on-knee hit from Anaheim's Ryan Strom. Connor fourth in the NHL, we mentioned, 17 goals in 26 games. So the Jets keeping their fingers crossed he'll be okay. I know he's not playing tonight against the LA Kings. And again, they're saying day to day. And I think he missed at least one game earlier in the week as well. A couple of trading places reports. We had the St. Louis Blues shipping defenseman Robert Bortuzzo to the New York Islanders for a 7th round pick in 2024. He made his debut in that game against the Kings. And they said on the broadcast that Bortuzzo, a guy who's always had himself a healthy beard, now had to be clean shaven under the law of Lou Lamoriello there in the Islanders, which is just so, so bizarre to me. But also the Columbus Blue Jackets sent forward Eric Robinson to the Buffalo Sabres for a conditional 7th round pick in 2025.
I'm not saying the guy would turn down work, but I wonder if Radko Gudas has a no trade clause to any Lou Lamoriello team.
That is a very good point.
I'm not shaving this thing, man.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
I don't know that a razor could do it. You know, you'd need a weed whacker.
Yeah. And he would certainly scare the kids if he came home without the 100%. Beard.
Might scare his wife.
Yeah. For sure. If he walked in the locker room, I guarantee you his teammates would not immediately recognize him.
No.
I don't know what he looks like without it. It would be bizarre.
Yeah, and it's as thick a beard as I've ever seen. Yeah,
it would a puck would bounce off it. There's no doubt.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I do wonder when the last time he saw his own chin was.
So let's get to the Law and Order report. And Doug, if I told you an NHL player received a 6-game suspension without knowing what he did or who the player was, what would be your first thought of a player getting a 6-game suspension?
That it was somebody that has been suspended multiple times.
100%. That's exactly what my thought would be as well. But David Perron,
Tom Wilson done now?
Yeah, David Perron of the Detroit Red Wings, who had never been suspended in his NHL career, got a 6-game suspension. Now, he did do something that was over the line. There's no doubt he cross-checked Ottawa's Artem Zub in the head during a game on Saturday. It was in retaliation for what was done to captain Dylan Larkin, which has him out of the lineup. And Larkin was laying on the ice, almost looked like he was out cold at the time. So you can understand the reaction. Doesn't excuse anything you do in that situation. But Perron, yeah, 6-game suspension. He does have, because it's 6 or more games, he does have the option to appeal to Commissioner Gary Bettman. And if necessary, he could take that to a neutral arbitrator as well. But as we've talked about in the past, the process of the appeals moves so slowly that he'll end up serving the suspension pretty much anyway. It's more about getting money back at that point. It was certainly an ugly incident. Artem Zub and Matthew Joseph were part of a collision, if you want to call it that, with Dylan Larkin that saw him hit the ice. And you could understand David Perron wanting to obviously stick up for his teammate. But you can't cross-check someone in the head in retaliation, even if there's, you know, a reason for it. But the whole discussion on this is 6 games and the complete lack of any kind of consistency within the Department of Player Safety. We've seen things like this happen on the ice. And if it's been a player, and by the way, Artem Zub, he got shaken up on the play for sure, but he did not miss a shift. He stayed in the game. So there was no injury there, which usually plays a factor. No injury, guy's never been suspended before. Typically, that's a 2 or 3 game at most. So 6 games certainly seems a lot. I don't have a problem with things like that being suspended for 6 games, but you just need to do it across the board. And the NHL doesn't do it. I know there's probably people saying, oh, you guys, they can never win with you. If it's 2 games, it's too light. If it's 6 games, it's too much. I'm just saying, and I think the players are saying it too. Fans are saying it for the most part. Give us some consistency. Make it be this way across the board, and you don't do it. And if that's why there's so much confusion with this.
Correct. So not that long ago, we had Jake Wallman in the NHL get a fine for high-sticking someone in the head, cross-checking them in the head. Now, it was in the flow of the game. So same team, by the way, he's also on Detroit. And I believe it was Jeff Skinner. They were jousting for position, but he flat out cross-checked Jeff Skinner right in the head, and Skinner did not see it coming. This one, Artem Zub did see it coming. It's a stoppage in play, but it was also as intentional as it gets. You could argue, and probably did, Jake Wallman's was accidental. He was just trying to fight for position. But you got to be in better control of your stick than cross-checking a guy in the head. But David Perron knew absolutely what he was doing. He snapped. I think he was entangled with Zub just before, and Zub ended up falling on Larkin, who was out cold on the ice. And Perron looked back and saw Zub on top of Larkin, turned back, and went right after him. So he was just engaged with this guy in a battle for position, and now he sees him laying on top of his prone teammate and captain, and he snapped. A reaction I don't think many people would call out of the blue, but you got to be better than that, David Perron. And I really don't have a problem with it being a 6-game suspension, because it was an egregiously dangerous act. And I've been advocating for 17 years now on this show to punish the action and not the result. So it doesn't matter that Artem Zub was not hurt. You going in with speed and intentionally cross-checking a player in the head with bad intentions deserves a swift punishment and severe punishment. And it doesn't matter that it's your first offense. But as you said, the other side of that coin is you got to do this more consistency. We saw not too long ago, I can't remember the player, maybe you do, a guy get either suspended or a very short fine for the same kind of thing. He was frustrated and he swung his stick and hit a guy in the head.
Oh, Jacob Trouba.
Yeah. He wasn't fine. He wasn't suspended. It was a fine. He got a fine for that. Now, what's the difference? Ultimately, what is the difference? Jacob Trouba was frustrated, swung his stick, not lightly, with some force, at somebody's head intentionally. Got a fine, just had to write a check, which is nothing to these guys. David Perron gets frustrated, cross-checks a guy in the head, gets 6-game suspension. The difference between those is a canyon. You can't tell me his was that much worse than what Jacob Trouba did. It's just, it's not consistent. And it's David, it's George Peros, who, again, owns a line of, or is involved in a line of clothing called Violent Gentlemen. He's a former goon. It's the wrong person to have in charge of player discipline. We've said that for years. They should have Lady Bing winners that followed the rules in charge of player discipline because they played the game at a high level and adhered to the rules, so they know it can be done. So they're not going to hear any excuses of, oh, I didn't do this. No, man, I played. I didn't do this stuff. Get out. So I would rather see that than a goon, but that's not the way the NHL runs things, and they always back up the Department of Player Safety. They've never said a bad word about them. George Peros has never been in any threat of getting fired or replaced. And if he did, it would probably be with, you know, some other former goon that just retired. It's unfortunate. I'm not going to sit here and defend David Perron's actions because they're indefensible. He shouldn't have done what he did. It was dangerous, and he's lucky Artem Zub was not seriously injured. But I am going to criticize the Department of Player Safety for their wild inconsistency in enforcing the rules and dishing out discipline and making excuses for certain players and finding a way not to suspend them and then dropping the hammer on others. It's just, it's not fair to the players. And I hope David Perron appeals it, if only for the principal.
He's appealing it.
It's yeah. And I hope he wins. He won't, because it's,
As we said, he might win. I think he actually might win, but it's not going to get him probably any games.
No,
because he might get some money back, and I guess for him, it's certainly worth that. But no, yeah, I agree. Columbus Blue Jackets defenseman Eric Branson suspended for 1 game for a fight altercation he got into with the Florida Panthers Nick Cousins. Cousins checked Branson from behind, sending him headfirst into the boards. Cousins was called for a major penalty for boarding. It was then downgraded to a minor penalty after review, which didn't sit well with Branson, who later went after Cousins, grabbed him, slammed him to the ice, and started throwing punches while he was laying on the ice. Branson received a 2-minute penalty for instigating, 5 for fighting, and a 10-minute misconduct, and a 10-minute misconduct for instigating, and a 10-minute misconduct for the whole thing. Whatever. Game misconduct. Yeah. He got kicked out of the game. So
he got a 10-minute misconduct for instigating, major penalty for fighting, and a game misconduct.
There you
go. Then, of course, the minor penalty. But it's a 1-game suspension. I don't have a problem with that, I guess. I mean, Nick Cousins, like you said, it wasn't out of the blue. Nick Cousins and him had an altercation there, but you cannot just jump a guy and start wailing punches at him if he wants nothing to do with it.
Well, clearly
you can,
yeah,
but you're going to be punished.
He was obviously upset, and I'm not even saying he's wrong, that a very dangerous play that could have seriously injured him was downgraded to a minor penalty, and he decided, well, if you're not going to take care of me, I'm going to take care of myself. I get it.
Yeah, I would. I get that. But I'm betting that Eric Goodbranson says worth it.
I 100%.
You know, 100%. I will gladly sit out this game.
Yeah.
To make my point that jackass cannot do that to me without facing retribution.
One random shot to throw out there, and I do have some breaking news here, so I don't know if you have the whistle ready, but Washington Capitals owner Ted Leonsis is preparing to move the NHL franchise, as well as the Washington Wizards, which he owns from the NBA, to a new arena complex and entertainment district in Northern Virginia. The plan is for the two teams to move into a massive new development at Alexandria's Potomac Yard neighborhood. Virginia state lawmakers voted to approve the arena project in Northern Virginia. A final vote of the state's General Assembly is needed to pass the project, which would create an $8 million square foot campus site in Alexandria. The team would be looking to break ground in 2025 and start playing in 2028. The Capitals have been playing at Capital One Arena in downtown D.C. since 1997 and will continue to do so until the new proposed arena complex could be constructed sometime in the coming years. In response to the proposed move, D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser announced a new bill offering Leonsis $50 million in financing for a complete renovation and modernization of Capital One Arena. The lease for the Capitals and the Wizards for Capital One Arena is up in 2027.
Well, you and I remember the Los Angeles Raiders planning on moving to Irwindale, which sweetened the pot for the what they got. You know, Al Davis used them as leverage to get a better deal in Los Angeles. And I'm not saying that's what Ted Leonsis is doing here, but it has worked out that way. That, hey, I'm going to move this team. And now they're saying, well, wait a minute. What if we give you some money to stay? So we'll see. I would imagine he's leaving because
I would too. Yeah. This is the new thing, right? It's not just the arena. It's all the other things that are built around the arena, the shopping malls, the hotels, the apartment complexes, all that kind of stuff.
Correct. And it's no renovation to Capital One is going to make up for that.
Correct.
That revenue.
Yep.
And if there's one thing Ted Leonsis loves, it's money. And even though he never needs another dollar in his life, the prospect of getting more money is just too good for him to pass up. So he'll never do the right thing. He'll always do what makes him the most money.
You know, we've seen the LA Rams play games in Orange County. I was at a New York Jets game this year, which was played in New Jersey. Obviously, though, there's a difference, right? In the East Coast, and I know the DMV area a little bit. I'd love to know, you know, folks in that area, what they think about this, if this is a major inconvenience or no. But clearly in the eastern part of the U.S., things are more close together. It's not quite as big of a deal as it would be here in Southern California, where driving to Orange County for an L.A. team is quite, you know, it's especially with traffic being what it is it's quite different. It's quite a haul. So,
well, that was, I mean, to the Rams' defense, though, they played on Sundays, the lightest day of traffic in LA.
True, true, true.
It's one a week. You know, you're not getting there after work. Capitals games are after work.
Yep.
So getting there, but you and I don't know. Maybe the majority of their fans are coming from that part of
Could be. Yeah, I'd love to know. And we'll be so the Commanders, they play in Maryland. And now you're gonna have the Wizards and the Capitals playing in Virginia. So I guess you've got only one actual, the baseball team's still there in DC for now, but that, interesting.
Yeah.
And DC obviously is a very small place, but still.
Correct. And real estate is at a premium. So the land that those stadiums occupied is worth a fortune to be turned into offices and everything else there in DC.
It is interesting. The old RFK Stadium is still, it's there. It's just a, you know, it's an abandoned building. You could drive by it and it's weird seeing those old stadiums and they're just nothing. I don't know why it's still there, but where the Redskins played and were so good for many years, it's still there. It hasn't been demolished and nothing's been built there. It's just still there.
Well, it's sad to see that they would move because, you know, you like having the team is called the Washington Capitals, not the DMV Capitals. And them not playing in Washington, D.C., why are you named the Washington Capitals at that point?
You're true, but Virginia. We do see this fairly regularly in sports now.
No,
right?
The
49ers don't play in San Francisco.
Near San Francisco.
Yeah, the Jets and Giants don't play in New York and so on and
Dallas
so forth.
Dallas doesn't play in Dallas, the Cowboys. So, yeah, I get it. But it's disappointing to see. But there's nothing we can do about it because Ted Leonsis is going to chase money. Yeah. So there's literally nothing anybody can do about it. And Lord knows Gary Bettman's not going to stand in his way.
Oh, God, no. Why? It's his boss. He's not going to do it.
Let me help you pack.
Before we get to the upon further review segment, we do have some breaking news. It's not good news for Kyle Connor or the Winnipeg Jets, being reported that he will miss 6 to 8 weeks after that knee on knee hit this past week. So the leading scorer for the Jets, leading goal scorer, out 6 to 8 weeks. So
You hate to hear that. That is terrible. So he's out until mid-February. Yeah, that's brutal. That is terrible news.
All right. Upon further review, what do we got, Doug?
After further review, my friend. And we go by division. And we start alphabetical order, so we start in the Atlantic. Eddie, they've drafted well with guys like Tim Stützle, Brady Tkachuk, Thomas Chabot, Drake Batherson, and others. They've signed good free agents like Vladimir Tarasenko and Claude Giroux. And they made good trades to get guys like Jacob Chychrun and Cam Talbot in the past. And yet, the Ottawa Senators are dead last in the Eastern Conference. Again. After further review, the Senators franchise is cursed.
I don't believe in curses.
All right, how about this? Certain franchises.
And you can't blame Eugene Melnyk anymore. Yeah, you can't blame him anymore.
Well, but certain franchises just never win. The Lions, the Chargers, the Padres, the Clippers. There's certain franchises that just never win.
No, you can't say never. I mean, Ottawa's been to a Stanley Cup final. The Chargers have been to a Stanley Cup final. I mean, I don't know how DJ Smith is still employed. We talk about coaches being let go. I'm not saying it's all his fault, but that's interesting. I know they've got new ownership there. He wasn't, you know, the head coach when they bought the team, or he was, but you know what I'm saying.
And here's a name for you, Craig Berube.
Yeah,
he's available.
Yeah,
I would love to go get him and put him in behind the bench. No offense to DJ Smith, but there's a guy that has taken over a team that was underachieving. And took them to the Stanley Cup final that year, and they won.
So what is the question? What is the upon further review question?
Upon further review, they're cursed.
No,
they will never win no matter what they do. They've done everything right. They've drafted well. They've signed good free agents. They've traded good players, and they still
as a New England Patriots fan, shame on you, sir. That franchise was a floundering mess for decades, and it took a quarterback and a coach.
And an owner.
It did not take a quarterback and a coach.
It took an owner.
Okay.
Robert Kraft came in and immediately made them better with Bill Parcells and Drew Bledsoe.
Well, the Ottawa Senators have a new owner and we'll see. We'll see what he can do. But I know upon further review, I'm overturning that call.
Overturned. Let's go to the Central. I said the Senators were cursed. So let's keep the supernatural theme going and talk about a team that is like a movie villain. You think it's dead, but it's not. You think you've escaped its clutches. But you haven't. No matter what changes, no matter what happens, the Nashville Predators are a movie villain. They never die or go away, and they will be back in the playoffs this season.
Well, the Central Division, certainly, when you're looking at kind of that third team, when Winnipeg just suffered a pretty significant loss there, I wouldn't be shocked, certainly. And yeah, they're playing some pretty decent hockey of late. But Edmonton's coming on. They're going to at least be a wild card team, and the Pacific is very strong.
They're going to replace Arizona. They're not going to replace Nashville as a wild card team.
Well, but Nashville could move up. I could see them finishing third in the division. So
that's what I'm saying. Edmonton's not taking their spot.
I'll say upon further review, yes, the Nashville Predators will be a playoff team.
The Metropolitan, Eddie, they hired a new GM, and he went all in again, trying to win with this roster. They went out and got Erik Karlsson in a trade just a year after re-signing Chris Letang, and they've recommitted to Evgeny Malkin. But when it's all said and done, the Penguins are in seventh place in the Metropolitan right now and are as close to last place, Columbus, as they are a wild card spot. They don't have a first round pick in the draft next summer. They don't have a third round pick either. After further review, the Penguins need to be major sellers at the deadline.
That call is upheld. Absolutely. 100%. I cannot uphold that call more. There's zero chance. I mean, look, Philadelphia and Washington have been major surprises, and when it's all said and done, maybe they fall back and Carolina and New Jersey do what we thought they were going to do.
And Tampa.
But Pittsburgh, I mean, they absolutely. I time for Kyle Dubas to do what he's got to do. He didn't want to do it when he took the job. Told the ownership, I'm sure we'll do what we can to give another run at this, but we've seen what we've seen, and now it's time to make some hard decisions and to start the rebuild in Pittsburgh.
Here's the problem for him, though, Eddie. The the no trade clauses that they have are stacked deep. I'm going to look at this up real quick, because if you look at like, okay, we need to make some moves. Here's players that have no trade clauses on the Pittsburgh Penguins right now, or no movement clauses. Sidney Crosby, Evgeny Malkin, Jake Guentzel, Brian Rust, Riley Smith, Jeff Carter, Eric Karlsson, Chris Letang, Ryan Graves, Marcus Pettersson, and Tristan Jarry. That doesn't leave you many options. Does anybody want Lars Eller? Probably not.
Well,
I mean, you got to try and talk some of these guys into waiting.
Yeah, maybe a couple of those guys are like, yeah, you know what? I wouldn't mind going somewhere else.
Yeah. Oh, and another player that has a no trade clause that is absolutely an abyss on him is Rickard Rakell. He's injured right now, but he's got 4 years left at $5 million a year. I would tell him absolutely I'm not waiving it, but that's up to the players. But no, he's got to do what he can to start changing that roster. It's time. It's past time. Let's go to the Pacific, and this one, I know you're going to uphill. I know you're going to confirm this one, because there were some heady times earlier this season when they were winning games with comebacks and the rookies and veterans all looked good. But reality has returned, and the Ducks find themselves in last place in the Pacific Division beneath even the San Jose Sharks.
Goodness.
And only 1 point ahead of dead last in the NHL. They have one win in their last 9 games. After further review, the Ducks are going to be back in the lottery and will be add another stud prospect to their already stacked cupboard.
Well, you are correct. I will uphold that call.
And we have a bonus. Because that one was so easy for you.
All right.
There's a player in the NHL, Eddie, who was traded a couple years ago. And since then, he has played in 53 games for his new team, including the playoffs. In those 53 games, he has 7 goals and 15 points. And he's a forward. I say again, 53 games, 15 points forward. To get this player, and only this player, the team gave up a roster player, a 5th-round pick, a 4th-round pick, a 3rd-round pick, a 2nd-round pick, and a 1st-round pick. After further review, Eddie, the Tanner Janot trade is the worst trade in NHL history.
Well, NHL history, I only go back to the 90s.
Understood.
I will certainly say it's the worst trade in the history of this show. How about that?
I can deal with that.
And this is, I know, you know, I bring
it's
this
not
up
revisionist history.
When look, every fan base is like this in every sport, but there are always a certain group who want to criticize the general manager. And certainly I've heard that from some Kings fans who are critical of GM Rob Blake. And I always say there's no GM that's batting 1,000. There are good moves and there are bad moves. If there are more bad moves than good moves, then that general manager needs to be removed. But if you want an example of that, look at the general manager at Tampa Bay, who we thought almost walked on water for a while there. It could do no wrong. And he's been the man who has pulled the trigger on this awful, awful deal. So,
I mean, can you even imagine 5 draft picks and a roster player for Tanner Janot? And like I said, it's not revisionist history. We've been doing this show for 17 years. Go back and listen to the episode when he got traded. We will have called this dicey then. We didn't get it at the time. I looked at his stats and I thought, man, they gave up a lot to get him. And then I looked it up and I'm like, holy mackerel, I forgot how much they gave up to get him. And only him. It's not like they got other things with him. Crazy. David Poyle's, one of his greatest moves was that trade right there. My goodness.
Julian Brisebois was the name that was not coming to mind for.
Yeah, I would have been blushing, asking for that.
And you know, it's funny, at the time it happened, because of what Julian Brisebois has done in Tampa, I was like, well, maybe this guy's crazy like a fox. Maybe he knows something we don't know. Nope. Apparently not.
Yeah. I mean,
Was granted by the genie.
I get that Tanner Janot is not there to score goals. I get that they're not bringing him in there to play and score 100 points a week or a year. I get that. that there, he's got a physical presence and different role in that team. But still, you can find a player to fill that role far cheaper than what he gave up to get Tanner Janot. My goodness.
We're excited to be joined once again by Sam Carcitti in his 15th year covering the Flyers. He does good work for PhillyHockeyNow.com, and you can follow him on Twitter at Broad Street Bull, BroadStBull. Hey, Sam, how are you?
Hey, Eddie, how's it going?
Good, doing good. And the Flyers, maybe surprisingly, are doing pretty good. When you look at the surprises in the NHL this season, I think Philadelphia would have to be in the discussion. Currently third in the Metropolitan Division. What did you think we would see from the Flyers this season, and how surprised are you at what you've seen so far?
Yeah, to be honest with you, I did not think we'd see a team that was contending for a playoff spot. I would still be stunned if they ended up with a playoff spot, but good for them. They are playing, they're really overachieving, and they're playing an exciting brand of hockey. They're playing quicker. They're playing with confidence and with a purpose, and a lot of the young guys are chipping in, and this is kind of a best case scenario. I think most of us, myself included, thought they really wouldn't be a Stanley Cup contender for about 3 years, and that still may come to fruition. But you know, Danny Briere and his staff with Keith Jones, they have things have kind of accelerated here. And to me, the best part about this season is seeing the young guys, the Tyson Forsters, the Bobby Brinks, even young veterans like Joel Farabee really produce. Travis Konecny is another one, a young veteran. And they have a good mix of young and old, and not that old, but, you know, guys have been around for a while, like Couturier and Cam Atkinson. And that's been a big plus, too. I think not many of us thought that Cam Atkinson and Sean Couturier, after missing last year with injuries, I don't think many of us thought they would step right in, but they have done a great job. And, you know, I thought there would be a period where it would take them a while to get back in their rhythm, but both of them had played very well. And of course, Carter Hart has been lights out. If you had to go for an MVP right now, it would probably be either Carter Hart. Is an MVP of the Flyers. It would probably be Carter Hart, Travis Konecny, who I mentioned, or Travis Sanheim, who has probably been the most pleasant surprise on the team. He is having an excellent year, probably deserves to make the All-Star team. He's second on the team with 21 points, and he has really become a take-charge guy out there with Ivan Provorov traded to Columbus. They needed one of the defensemen to step up, and Sanheim has done exactly that.
It does seem to be a bit ironic that there were a lot of people around the league saying this team needs to start a rebuild, and yet the Flyers continually seemed to resist that. They wanted to be, you know, seemed like they were, you know, a little bit unrealistic on what the situation was. And now that they have had the regime change and are appearing to be more in a rebuild mode, now they're having this success. It doesn't usually work that way.
Yeah, you're right. And but as I said, they're kind of doing it. They're doing it the right way. They're adding a few pieces. The most noticeable this year, of course, are Brink, who's a rookie. Zamula is not quite a rookie; just misses that distinction on defense. He's done a good job, and Tyson Forster. But then they have the young guys like Owen Tippett, who was showing last year was not a fluke when he had 27 goals. He's a young guy. Joel Farabee, you know, he was here last year, but in a way he wasn't, because he wasn't himself. He had the neck surgery and just was not himself. And this year he's already got 10 goals and 18 points. And you know, he probably is going to be at least a 25-goal scorer. And he's a young guy. So, and as I mentioned, some of the veterans, this to me is how you develop a winner. You know, you have some veterans, you have some rookies, and you have some guys that are in between. And, you know, that's what you're getting right now from the Flyers. And even a young guy like Sam Ersson has given them some quality games. He's the backup goaltender. And, you know, so it's been a surprising joy to watch this team, you know, develop into a quality team. I would still be surprised they made the playoffs, but this team is fun to watch. There's no question about it.
You mentioned Danny Breer and Keith Jones being brought in to change things up. And I know that they throw out, you know, talking about the culture of the team. And that can be just, you know, a buzzword, I guess, that people kind of throw out there. But is there anything you can kind of put your finger on and say that there is this culture change that they've been talking about that they want to have? Is there something you can look at and say, yes, that is different than what we've seen recently with the Flyers as far as how the organization is moving?
Yeah, I think the culture change is that they're not looking for a quick fix. I think in the past, you know, they've kind of done the rebuild half-assed, I think, if you will. I mean, where they would, have some young players play, but then they would sign a couple veterans to get them over the top to make the playoffs. And I think this year, you know, they really, you know, yes, they've added a couple veterans, but guys that really – like a Mark Stahl, for instance, or, they added Hathaway, guys that, they're really not depending on for the future, and guys that they're not afraid to bench, let's put it that way. They're not afraid to put them, like Stahl, they're not afraid to sit him down and put Samuel in there, but they like having him there for his mentorship. So they're doing it the right way. They're not trying to sneak into the playoffs, and the results have been great. But as I said, two veterans have played a big part in that. And that's, we can't overlook that. Sean Couturier, Cam Atkinson, they've shown what this team missed last year. And I mentioned Sanheim has been, you know, probably the most stunning player. His turnaround from last year has been really a big surprise. And that's played a big part in it as well. So, you know, you put it all together. And the other surprise, team-wise, I would say, is the penalty kill. They were awful last year. Now they're fourth in the league. Their power play is still awful. You would have thought that would have improved with the addition of Couturier and Atkinson off the injured list. They've got some big shooters out there like Forster. But that has not been productive. If you want to look at a negative, that's been a negative. The power play is 27th in the league, and they're fortunate to even be 27th because they have just looked out of sorts for most of the year and disorganized and bad entries. But on the reverse, the penalty kill has been a revelation. They're killing at almost 87%, and that's the reason that they're in a playoff spot right now. It's been a good almost one third of the season for the Flyers, no question about it.
We're talking with Sam Carcitti, who has been covering the Flyers for many years, is doing good work for PhillyHockeyNow.com. You mentioned the benching. There's certainly no coach in the NHL who's more comfortable with benching players than John Tortorella, who can be a polarizing guy. But I wonder what has been his role. It's hard not to give the head coach some credit when a team is doing well, but what's been his role in all of this? What is his stamp on this team? And has he at the least, kind of been on board with what Danny Breer and Keith Jones have basically said we're going to do going forward?
Yeah, you have to give credit where credit is due. The team is 15-10-3, and a lot of that is Tortorella. He has made some very questionable moves with benchings, as you mentioned, Eddie. One of them is with Morgan Frost, who really was not playing that poorly at all. He benched him for a while. Now with an injury to Noah Cates, he was kind of forced to play Frost, and Frost has done well. That was probably the one move that I totally disagreed with this year. I think you judge a coach by how much he gets out of his players. And I think he's gotten the maximum out of most of his players. So you have to give, John Tortorella probably a B+ so far, or an A- for what he's done. He's made some decisions. You can question not using Farabee, maybe on more on the power play. Excuse me. The Morgan Frost decision, in the lineup for a couple games, out for five games, in for a couple, out for five. I mean, it was just maddening, I thought. And but as I said, since the injury to Noah Cates, who broke his foot, you know, Frost has done a good job. He's back in there now on a regular basis. But the bottom line is how they produce. And I like the fact that young players are developing, the Brinks and the Forsters and the Zamulas. And you have to give John Tortorella a lot of credit for that.
Well, you mentioned his name earlier, and he's not a young player anymore, but Carter Hart certainly had a big spotlight on him coming into the season, trying to figure out, is he in fact going to be the future in net for the Flyers? So far, has that question been answered? Has it been kind of a pleasant answer, I guess, for the Flyers so far?
Oh, no question. I mean, he's been you know, one of the top goaltenders in the league, and you know, and he's got a fairly inexperienced defense in front of him. So, you know, kudos to him. But the Flyers have been, you know, winning board, doing the little things, winning board battles, you know, dominating in a lot of areas behind the goal and outworking teams. You didn't always see that with the Flyers team. Last night they basically they lost in overtime to Nashville 3-2, but the Flyers totally outplayed Nashville. They outshot them by 2-1. The shots were like 39-24, 39-23, something like that. And that was indicative. Saras just was tremendous for Nashville and kind of stole the win. But, you know, that's been the case in a lot of games. The Flyers have not been outplayed very often. And that's a credit to this team, a credit to John Tortorella. He's got them working. They are outworking most teams. And as I said, that's made it fun to watch. They're out shooting teams on a regular basis. That's not always a fair indicator, but I think for this team it has been. And the fact that some of these guys know, hey, there's more depth in the system now, I think it makes them work harder. And as a result, the Flyers are winning more than they're losing. And you got to give credit to Tortorella and to these players. The players have really, really done a great job in the first one-third of the season.
Well, you said you would be surprised if they do end up in a playoff position. Is it more of there are certain things you don't believe that can continue, or is it more of some of the teams in the Metro, Carolina, New Jersey, aren't quite playing up to their potential and you think they may eventually get there? What are some of the things you see as to your feelings that you would be surprised if they made the playoffs?
Yeah, a little bit of both. And you hit the nail on the head. I think Carolina and New Jersey, you know, will end up ahead of them, you know, probably significantly ahead. If you look at the rosters, you know, that's how I see it. But this Flyers team has proven a lot of people wrong so far. And the defense, to me, is a work in progress. Right now, Flyers team is seventh in the league in defense and goals allowed. They're allowing 2.71 goals a game. I'd be surprised if they can keep that pace up. But as I said, you know, some of these players are – Sean Walker, for one, have been big surprises. And we should mention Sean Walker. I don't think I've mentioned him yet today. He's provided a good right-handed shot. He's joined the rush and provided steady defense. He's blocking shots. This whole Flyer team has done a great job of blocking shots. They're really throwing their body around. And maybe they'll surprise everybody and sneak in. But you make a great point when you mention, especially with, you know, New Jersey and Carolina. I think there are two teams that are just too talented, you know, not to make the playoffs and be ahead of the Flyers.
Well, Sam, I had asked you off air if there was anything you would like me to promote for you. And you hit me with something that I would really, really love to see and I think would be amazing. I know you're certainly keeping your fingers crossed, but you're working on a TV show, a series. I know you had said that the ultimate wish would be like some kind of a Netflix series, TV series on the Broad Street Bullies.
And that's for a lot of people who don't know, maybe a younger generation, I think they would be blown away to get that kind of a story. And, you know, a team obviously in the 70s that was winning Stanley Cups with a very different style of hockey than we see today. And you said a book as well. Maybe you could just touch on, for people who don't know, what was so intriguing about that team and how they went about winning Stanley Cups.
Yeah, if you remember, Eddie, the Philadelphia at that time was known as the City of Losers. The Eagles were, you know, at the bottom of the NFL. The Phillies were having losing season after losing season and in last place. The 76ers were coming off a 9-73 season, if you can believe that, the worst in NBA history. And the Flyers came out of nowhere. This is their seventh season since they joined the league. Won the Stanley Cup. In fact, they won a Stanley Cup quicker than any expansion team in history up until last year when Vegas won. Vegas won in its sixth year. The Flyers won their seventh year. So it took almost 50 years for a team to do it quicker than the Flyers did. And as you mentioned, and most hockey fans know, but for the uninitiated, the Flyers were known as the Broad Street Bullies. They had a lot of guys that threw their weight around, the Dave Schultz's and Bob Kelly's and Andre Moose Dupont, Don Selesky. But they also had some great players, Hall of Famers like Bill Barber, Bobby Clark, Bernie Parent. They had blue-collar players, guys like Ross Lonsberry, Ed Van Impe, Barry Ashby. Rick McLeish was a great scorer. Bill Barber, I mentioned. Gary Dornhofer was a great scorer, and on and on. But our story, you know, most people, if you're a hockey fan, you know the Flyers won consecutive cups in 74 and 75. But what they don't know is what happened behind the scenes. A lot of dramas behind the scenes. Fred Shearer was the colorful coach, and Ed Snyder was the very colorful owner. And what we're doing, we're writing a TV series. It's for 2 years, 8 episodes a year, and it's mostly the behind the scenes, how the wives were involved in helping the Flyers win cups, and behind the scenes with Ed Snyder and Lou Scheinfeld, who was the vice president, and Gene Hart, who was their Hall of Fame broadcaster, and on, and what Bobby Clark was like off the ice and his battles with diabetes, and so our story is probably 75% of what goes on behind the scenes and maybe 25% hockey. And for those who watch Winning Time, the HBO special or HBO series, I think it went for 2 years on the Lakers. And it was a lot of off the court drama with Magic Johnson and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and Jerry West and on and on. Ours is similar to that in that it doesn't focus as much on the games as the behind the scenes. And so Jeff Hare and I are putting it together. Jeff's a director, writer who does a lot of stuff in LA. He's based in LA, but he grew up in the Philadelphia area. So we're really excited. We're also doing a book with it. And the book will come out next fall. And we have a couple of episodes written. And God willing, we're going to take it to some of these networks like HBO and Netflix and Amazon Prime and on and on. And we think it's a tremendous story and that someone will pick it up. And we've gotten good feedback from some of the networks already. So we're very excited about it. And I appreciate you giving me some time to talk about it because we even have probably one episode just on their local bar, which was Rexy's in South Jersey, where they used to hang out. And some of the stories I can't say on the air here, but I think the viewers will really enjoy it. And you'll really get the feel of these Flyers. These guys were blue collar kids, young kids. Most of them were 24 and under. And they would sit at the bar they were everyday people, would sit at the bar with, you know, people off the streets and just swap stories. And they were everyday men and they captivated the city. When they had a parade in Philadelphia to introduce the team in 1967, 20 people showed up in Center City. And 7 years later, there were 2 million people at their parade when they won the cup in 1974. The next year, there were 2.3 million people when they won the cup in 1975. So it's really a love story between the Philadelphia fans and these kids, young kids from Canada. And it's an amazing story, and we're really proud and happy to talk about it. And hopefully it'll be on a TV screen near you in the near future.
Yeah, I hope so. And if it does happen, maybe we can have you back on to talk about it as well. It sounds great. I'd love to watch it. I have no connection to Philadelphia whatsoever, but I would, as a hockey fan, that would be tremendous. Sam, you were tremendous as always. Always appreciate you giving us some of your time to talk about the Flyers this year. And if things continue again, maybe not just with the TV show, but if the team keeps winning later on in the year, we could have you on again sometime.
My pleasure. Thanks, Eddie, and happy holidays.
Yes, thank you, Sam, and same to you.
Time for the third and final period here on the Puck Podcast. We've got a plus-minus segment to do. Yes, Doug? We're doing that again?
Yep. Okay.
We have a power play from Doug, but we've got your emails first. But before we get into that, quick thank yous to some friends of the show, especially our good friends over on Patreon. I want to thank all of our Patreon supporters for going the extra mile to support us and this weekly show. If you would like to support us on Patreon, if you have in the past, thank you. If you are right now, thank you. And if you'd like to in the future, thank you. It is patreon.com/puckpodcast. And of course, thank you to our friend Dave over at Tally Hockey Jerseys. TallyCustomHockeyJerseys.com is the place you need to go to get to the Puck Podcast team store. Obviously, the holidays coming up makes a great gift. We've got different styles of jerseys. There's a new style of jersey out there now. You've got the hats. You've got the beanies. TallyCustomHockeyJerseys.com. And if you are in need of any kind of custom hockey jerseys, obviously, you need to go to TallyCustomHockeyJerseys.com. Different colors, different styles. And the coolest thing is, if you've ever had the idea you wanted to make an awesome, you know, team jersey in your, whatever your idea is, Dave will help you make a logo and create it for you and tweak it with you. And it's really, really cool. So again, support our guy Dave over at TallyCustomHockeyJerseys.com. Let us get to the emails. Doug, you will lead us off as usual.
And our first email comes from our friend Michael in London, Canada. Not the London that Eddie visited.
London,
not too
Ontario.
Long ago.
Yeah.
Dear Doug and Eddie, I had a sad realization about NHL jerseys. I just can't possibly see the league ever having fun jerseys like minors and AHL teams after this whole year's worth of mess. I guess my dreams of all the fun and weird cartoon jerseys, similar to the Ducks' Break Through the Ice jersey or a famous singer on a blues jersey, are gone even if they were dim already. Is there any team that comes to mind that could have the most fun? I think teams like the Winnipeg Jets could work their crowd up, showing up in all white in the past, or do a Stormtroopers Star Wars night with uniforms for the players, of course. Get the GM in officer or admiral clothes and the coaches too. Calgary could put a bull on their jersey and have everyone show up in horns. Maybe even have someone in skates and a bull costume try and check some people in the halftime for prizes. Anaheim could work with Disney in any way. Well, then severed that tie a long time ago, unfortunately. Here's to more good hockey. Dear, that's Michael in London, Canada. I mean, if you get creative and hire creative people, pretty much any team can have really fun jerseys. So the Lightning, there's a lot that can be done there, obviously, when you think about that. The imagery of Lightning and the Tesla coil and all this stuff like that. To pick up on your Star Wars theme, you could have the Emperor shoot lightning from his hands whenever they score a goal. If Disney and Star Wars were willing to sign off on that. But yeah, I think, much like we were talking about in the first period when Eddie said teams just need a new owner, teams that are cursed need a new owner to turn things around.
And good luck with that, because why would they sell their team? It makes money every year.
Exactly.
They got to die. I mean, to be totally fair,
correct.
They got to die.
Correct.
Rocky Wirtz.
Eugene Melnick.
Yeah.
The change could happen when we get a new commissioner.
Actually, Bill Wirtz is who I should have said. Not Rocky Wirtz, Bill Wirtz, although Rocky is passed as well.
Both of them.
Anyway,
But if you get a new commissioner, he might be able to inject some ideas into this, because it's not going to be Gary Bettman. And the way you do it is you tell look, it's not, the owners are never going to bring this up because they think it's fun. They're going to do it because they can make money. So if you convince the owners that we're going to be able to sell a lot of jerseys to fans as collectibles and more tickets because people are going to want to come out to these special nights where we have Star Wars themed jerseys or whatever, then I think you could be onto something and coordinate it with large events. You know, a new season of Game of Thrones is coming out and we're going to have Game of Thrones night the week before it to promote that new season. And we're going to have themed jerseys and people from the show are going to be there and it's going to be a whole fun thing. I think a lot of people would show up.
Good for the Kings, right? Good for the, you know, Game of Thrones, Kings.
Sure.
Yeah.
But anybody could participate in that. You know, the Islanders could do that for God's sake. It's just, but yeah, it, I think that's where you get, you have to convince the owners that it's in their best interest financially. And then they'll do anything you want, literally anything you want to make them money. So if you can do that, Michael, never give up hope.
Our next email comes from Adam. He's in North Jersey. He says, hey guys, last week when Eddie brought up that Doug had a secret interview in the second period, my mind immediately went to Brian Kennedy and how we haven't heard from him in a while. Lo and behold, Eddie immediately brings him up and we get a Doug impression of him. Too weird. All that to say, bring back Brian. I've always enjoyed his views on hockey and would love to hear him again. Perhaps he fits better as an offseason guest, but if he's willing to jump on for a few minutes, I would, it would be great to hear from him again. Here's hoping the Devils trade it for a goalie soon. That is from Adam in North Jersey.
I have a question for you, Adam. Do you want Mackenzie Blackwood back? Because he's playing pretty well for the San Jose Sharks.
Yeah.
So let me know, Adam. You know the email address. And yeah, I'd love to have Brian on as a guest again soon. He actually got, he said he sent Eddie and me a text that he was, he had taken home cake from a party the night before when he heard the impression that we were doing. So he, it was accurate.
I was taking home cake from a party. It's not as good as you. It's not as good as you. No. I know our friend Julius Choi.
He very much enjoyed
it. Yes, he did. He is a longtime friend of the show, Ducks fan, and was a student of Brian Kennedy's, who Brian teaches at Pasadena City College. And yeah, Julius was a big fan and he works with you now.
Yeah.
So yeah.
And he was delighted by that. Cause I said, yeah, I said, did you listen to the show? I said, you got mentioned in the first period and then, so, you know, there's, and he listened and he was absolutely tickled.
This reminded me, by the way, just not for nothing, but I was in the press box not long ago at a Kings game. And I apologize for not remembering his name if he still listens, but a podcaster, he does an LA Kings podcast. It's the Banner Man podcast. He's like, hey, are you Eddie Garcia? I'm like, yeah, yeah. He's like, I eat Tim Tams because of you. I was like, oh, really? He's like, yeah, yeah. He's like, I listen to the Puck podcast and you guys talk about Tim Tams. And so I like Tim Tams now because of you guys. I'm like, oh, that's nice. So there you go.
Well, we should promote something a little healthier.
Nah.
I have diabetes because of you.
Congratulations.
Yeah. Our next email comes from Tobias, the Puck Podcast Iron Man, who's a Golden Knights fan in Sweden.
Oh, all right.
How about that? He says, G'day, hockey podcast goats. I'm hoping that means greatest of all time and not just a reference to the animal that'll eat anything destructive. First time emailer here writing to you from snowy Tornos, Sweden. How about that?
Nice.
I would imagine a beautiful part of the world. Came across your podcast while searching for a new hockey podcast to help me keep track of the NHL when I was joining a fantasy league for the first time. That was over 10 years ago, and I haven't missed a single episode so far, hoping to keep the Iron Man streak going, of course. I was always a fan of hockey, but I didn't have a team until Vegas joined the league. I thought I might as well join the bandwagon as it was exciting with a new franchise. I fell in love with that first season with the Misfits and Wild Bill lighting it up, but hated how they handled the Shipachov business and how they have treated players like Fleury. Both Stone and Eichel were somewhat favorite players even before they came to Vegas, since I had owned them both in fantasy, so them joining the team was a big plus for me. By the way, what are your thoughts on the elite Eichel, or Eichel elite status right now. Could use an update on that topic as he's been brought up multiple times on the Puck Podcast. We'll get to that in a second. I'll put a pin in it. Anyway, the real reason I'm writing today is to pick your brains on the goaltending in Arizona. Why is it so good? This year, Ingram has started like a beast, taking the starting role from Vemelka, who in turn was very good last year. The past five-ish years have seen goalies like Scott Wedgwood, now the backup in Dallas, Aiden Hill, the starter in Vegas and Stanley Cup champion, Darcy Kemper, Washington Capitals and former Stanley Cup champion, Antti Raanta, backup in Carolina, mostly good when healthy. These last four were all in the club between 2018 and 2021. They all have an above 900 save percentage while on the Coyotes, and it's not like they've had a good team in front of them. Do they just have good goalie coaches in Arizona? Or why do you think many goalies are successful in a club that otherwise has not had much success as of late? And that's not just on the ice. I really do love this podcast and hope you will continue for as long as you have the will and strength. Sorry for the long email. That is Tobias, the Puck Podcast Iron Man and Golden Knights fan in Sweden. Well, let's get back to your first question first. Eddie, we've talked about it in the past, and I will ask you just a yes or no question. Is Jack Eichel an elite player?
I would say no, and I've had that stance for a while, but that isn't to say he isn't a very good player. But elite to me means you're in consideration for MVP awards consistently, and I don't think he's that, but he's a very good player.
I would agree. I'd say he's a tier below elite, but still on a very high shelf. You got to win a lot of tickets at the carnival to get Jack Eichel off the counter. He's not in the glass case down there where 10 tickets will get him. You got to save up. As for Arizona, I have to chalk it up to goaltending coaches because you can't have that variety. And that's also explains why certain teams have always struggled, no matter who comes in net. Philadelphia comes to mind, and other teams like Arizona always succeed no matter who they have in net. So I got to chalk it up to the goaltending coaches, but I haven't dug too deep. That would be a great question for our friend Craig Morgan down in Arizona next time we have him on. Is the number of different players that have come through there in net and succeeded with, as Tobias says, not the greatest teams in front of them at all times. And it is interesting how they've been able to do that and then not be able to keep them. That's the other frustrating thing. These guys are doing well. Let's get rid of them. Let's see what they do with Ingram and Vemelka, who they have right now.
And Tobias in Sweden reminded me for some reason. I was at the Chargers-Broncos game this past weekend. And, you know, we do all the big tailgating. My wife's in a club. And there was a gentleman there from Switzerland who is a Chargers fan, flew over for the game, and had a great conversation with him. We talked a lot of hockey. He plays over in Switzerland, and we talked about Kevin Fiala and all the Roman Josi and all the Swiss players. And he talked about, you know, we know this from hockey fans who were trying their best to follow the sport overseas, how difficult it is to be an NFL fan in this case overseas, and the odd hours you got to watch and all that kind of stuff. So always appreciate our overseas listeners, and at least they don't have to like get up at 3 a.m. to listen to the Puck Podcast, right? We'll listen to that whenever they want. Our next email comes from Dylan in Florida, who's been a longtime listener for the show and checks in occasionally. He's a big Florida Panthers fan. He says, "Hey, Doug and Eddie, happy holidays to each of you and your families, first off. Secondly, the Panthers are doing fantastic so far this young season. It'll be glorious to see the eventual collapse of the big bad Bruins again in the postseason. Seems to be the norm for the Bees in hockey. Sorry, not sorry. Anywho, Verhaeghe has been on a tear again with teammates Reinhardt and so forth. He says, I've been to Hawks games here, Blue Jackets and Islanders." I guess he's saying Panthers against the Blackhawks, Blue Jackets, and Islanders. He says, going 2-1 in games I've attended so far. May try to go to that Anaheim game in a few weeks or months for Doug. Also, last season here was special for me. I went to my first ever conference final game, Game 3, and me and my dad went to the All-Star Skills Night. What a great time, and was proud to have welcomed all of hockey to my small city last season. Well, not that small. Go Panthers and boo the Bruins. He does not like the Bruins. He says, I'm also going to my first NBA game soonish, Celtics at Miami. But then he says, go Seas. which I think is the Celtics. So
if I'm reading the candy,
if I'm reading this right, Dylan hates the Bruins but likes the Celtics. So that is if I'm reading that right, that's interesting. That's very interesting.
He's a Patriots fan as well, so I think he likes. I think because he's a Panthers fan, he doesn't like the Bruins, but he likes all other Boston teams.
Huh. All right. Interesting.
And hello, Dylan. Been a while. Our next email, our last email, comes from Hart in Lake Echo, Nova Scotia. He says, gentlemen, hope you are well. Let me assure you, you were not the only ones who enjoyed the pensive cadence of the Dr. Brian Kennedy impersonation. That's very nice. I'm glad more people get it, and hopefully we have him on there, and I can talk to him in his own voice, and you can try and guess who's who. Let me. So this week I had a game. I'm a horrible hockey player. Paradoxically, I have no hands. How do you type this? and they are made of stone, but the sun shines even on a dog's buttocks sometimes, and I scored 4 in a row while playing defense. Anyway, 4 in a row.
What? In the same game?
That's what he's saying.
Holy, that's retire. It ain't never getting better than that.
That's the pants trick.
I just drop my stick and go.
Anyway, I was wondering what to call this. 3 goals is a hat trick. 3 in a row is a natural hat trick. 4 goals is a pants trick. Is 4 in a row a natural pants trick? Absolutely.
Yes, I would. Yeah, absolutely. It's too easy. That question is too easy to answer.
Perhaps the more risque pants trick au naturel. To the great relief of all involved, I was wearing shorts and thus had no pants to lose. No. Shorts are short for short pants. Lose the trousers, man. You scored 4 goals as Joe Thornton once eloquently said, if I did that in a game, I'd be stroking it. Remember that one, Eddie?
Vaguely, yeah.
Somebody had 5 goals in a game, and they were, I think it was Tomas Hertl, and they were chiding him for his celebration. And they asked him what he thought. And he said, if I scored 4 or 5 goals in a game, I'd be stroking it. So I'm not the guy to ask. Oh, love. Miss Joe Thornton, Jumbo Joe. He says, I ripped on Pierre-Luc Dubois last week, calling him a cancerous prima donna. Eddie thought that was a tad harsh, and it definitely was. And Doug requested more info regarding his time on my Jets. So I'll flesh it out a bit. Dubois was reasonably well-liked by many in Winnipeg. He was not an Evander Kane type who was utterly loathed by many of his teammates. Even this past week, former Kane teammate Kyle Wellwood suggested that Kane deserved all the vitriol directed at him. Dubois did not come close to this level of negativity, but he has commitment issues. He wasn't sold on Columbus, then Winnipeg. His worst shifts on either club are some of the laziest I've ever seen of an NHLer take. When he's on, he's a dominant power forward who's very tricky to contain. When he's off, which is equally often, he demoralizes his team with his contagious floating and non-existent jam. This spreads like a tumor throughout the team, and I just don't think you can win with important players who regularly mail it in. That said, the Kings are so deep that perhaps his negative influence will be less problematic. Have a good week, all. Hart in Lake Echo, Nova Scotia. Well, first of all, and once again, congratulations again on a natural pants trick. My goodness. From the defensive position, no less. Wild. I got to ask. You say you have no hands and they're made of stone. Does the goalie have eyes?
Was it a sight-impaired goaltender?
Yeah. Part of the goalie's equipment include a cane and a dog? My goodness. That is something right there, man. Well done by you.
I've had a few hat tricks, and I'm certainly a defensive defenseman, but certainly not a natural pants trick. That's crazy. That's next level.
That's crazy.
Yeah. As far as Pierre-Luc Dubois goes, he's played 25 games now with the Kings, and he certainly hasn't performed up to expectations. I was willing to give him the benefit of the doubt, new team, new system, that kind of thing. But I think going forward, it's time to start seeing a little more from him for sure. So I mean,
you say that, but the good news is for you that he only has 8 years left on his deal.
Well, I don't care about that.
He has absolutely no motivation to do anything.
Yeah, I care about this season. I'm not.
No, I know, but I'm just saying that's the problem with giving him that long term contract, and that's why I think the Blue Jackets and Jets were never willing to do so, and plus he wouldn't have signed there anyway. But man, for you to already be saying that surprises me. I thought we'd make it through this year, maybe year two, three, he'd start looking like a little bit of a all right. Well, let's see what we got. But
yeah, like I said, don't you think 25 games is, I mean, look, all players. Oh, yeah, are different.
This isn't,
some guys jump in and they're immediately amazing. No. And some guys, it takes a little longer, but I'm saying it's 25.
This isn't the NFL. There aren't team systems that are that dramatically different that you got to adjust to. It's hockey at the end of the day. And there's a flow to the game and you can see it. You can produce, even if you're not technically, you know, reacting right to where you're supposed to be on the forecheck or in the defensive zone. Exits, that kind of stuff. You can still tell the efforts there, the jam there, the production. So yeah, you've given him more than enough. You don't have to give him half the season before you can have an opinion for sure.
Let's get to
the plus minus.
Yeah. And then we've got Doug's going to go on a power play rant here. Apparently I don't know what this is about. Looking forward.
Yeah, you don't, but you're going to like it. And if you haven't listened to the show for a long time, it's been a long time since we've had a power play. It used to be a segment that we did whenever something was stuck in our craw, as they say, and that's certainly the case here. But let's get to the plus minus. And again, we go alphabetically by division, and I'm going to give you teams this week, Eddie. Make it easy on you. The Lightning have been struggling. These are four teams that are struggling in each division, one in each division. The Lightning have three games this coming week, Eddie. They are at Edmonton, at Calgary, and then home for St. Louis. 6 points available to them. I say plus minus, they will earn 3.5 points in those three games.
I'm going to take the under in that one.
Under. So minus. Let's not get sued. The Central Division, the Blues just made a coaching change, but they've been struggling. They have three games the coming week. Home for Ottawa, home for Dallas, at Tampa Bay. They will earn 4.5 points in those three games.
No. Under.
Oh, minus, sir, please.
Minus, sorry.
The Carolina Hurricanes in the Metropolitan have four games this coming week. They are at Detroit, home for Nashville, home for Washington, home for Vegas. That's a tough schedule right there.
It is, yeah.
They will earn 3.5 points in those four games.
Ooh, I'll take the under. Minus.
Wow. All right. And then finally, we have the Pacific Division, the Calgary Flames, who continue to tread water. They have three games in the coming week. They're at Minnesota, home for Tampa Bay, home for Florida. They will earn 2.5 points in those three games.
I will take the plus on that one.
There we go. Finally get one out of them. All right. And that brings us to the power play. So put 2 minutes on the clock, Eddie, and I'll try and get this done in that time. But if not, right, who cares?
All right. You really want me to do that? You want me to put 2 minutes?
No, because I'm not going to stop if I run out of time.
All right, then. Off you go.
Eddie, it was announced this past week by the NHL that the All-Star Skills Competition has been changed a little bit. It will feature 12 NHL All-Stars competing for points in 8 events, with the NHL All-Star who accumulates the most points taking home a prize of $1 million. There's nothing I want to see more than a bunch of millionaires competing to see which one can make money they don't need. Connor McDavid is in the middle of a $100 million contract, but let's all tune in to see if he can make another million in just a couple of hours. Or maybe it'll be Sidney Crosby, who's made over $141 million in his career already. Maybe it'll be a young star that hasn't made a fortune yet, someone like Cale Makar, who's in the middle of a $54 million contract. Or maybe a rookie like Connor Bedard, who's just starting his career on a deal that, with performance bonuses, could pay him over $13 million in his first three seasons. And better yet, the event is sponsored by DraftKings, which means that we common folk can bet our money on which of these multimillionaires will take home money that would be life-changing to us, but which they will barely even notice in their bank account. The NHL is once again tone deaf. I get the idea they're going for here, that dangling $1 million will get these guys to not skip the All-Star game and to actually try in the skills challenge. But it is so off-putting. And when the guys still don't go all out and just smirk their way through the events, it'll be even more off-putting. Instead, what they should do is make one tweak that'll actually make this worth doing. First, every team has their roster compete in these same events and declare a winner. The NHL then compiles the list of winners and picks the 12 players who were the top performers across the league, regardless of their star power. And those are the 12 that will compete in All-Star Weekend. Those 12 players will not only represent their team, but also a random fan selected by the team, and the winning team, that fan gets the $1 million. Now we're talking. Now I'm interested, and now I feel good about the person that walks out of there with a jumbo check for $1 million.
I love that idea. I love that. Oh my God. Can you imagine if you think you cheer for your team now, imagine that guy or girl cheering for his or her team.
And teams can say, look, in order to be eligible for this, you have to be a season ticket holder. Right. Not a full season ticket holder, even a partial season ticket holder qualifies. We're going to draw one name at random. That person is going to be the person that the team is, the player is playing for. And that player would try so much harder to win that fan $1 million than they would for themselves $1 million. I think. Because especially if you had all 12 fans there looking through the, I mean, what a moment though. A random NHL fan becomes a millionaire for something simple like this. You're giving away the same money anyway. It's not costing anybody anything. But why give $1 million to people that don't need it? Those fans would lose their minds. It'd be life-changing.
No, sounds good. I like it.
I mean, I think that it's a apt, and the PR, the other leagues would have to do something like this.
I hear you. I like it. All right, that will do it for this week's show. Thank you to everyone who sent an email this week. If you'd like to send an email, the email address is feedback@puckpodcast.com. We are on Facebook, facebook.com/puckpodcast, on Twitter @puckpodcast. And again, if you'd like to support us on Patreon, it is patreon.com/puckpodcast. Thanks to Sam Carcitti for being our special guest this week. And thank you for listening. For my co-host, Doug Stolian, I'm Eddie Garcia. And we'll talk to you next week with another edition of the Puck Podcast.